Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Lobot Lounge. The 90th Academy Awards just took place, and you know, that got us here in the lounge to start thinking about our own awards show. So, being the enterprising nerds that we are, we decided to showcase the very best of 2017, at least to us. Yes. In fact, we are presenting our favorite of 2017 film, TV, books, pop culture, regardless of whether or not it was released in 2017. See, it's all about us. It's about us because if it's new to us in 2017, if we discovered it in 2017, it qualifies. So join us here in the lounge as we do New to Me in 2017. Gathered here at the table, as always, is Mark Finn.
Hello, everybody.
Aaron de Arrive.
Hola.
And I am Joseph Otinos, your host and emotional touchstone. Welcome to the Gentlemen Nerds. Gentlemen.
Hey guys. Hi, how are you?
Yep.
Good to see you all. Wow. So many good things that I personally discovered in 2017 that took me completely by surprise and stuff that had been out there forever. And apparently I was like, you know, last to the party. Welcome to the party, pal.
Nice.
Yeah. But by the way, Die Hard is not that I've seen that.
No, it wasn't yet. Die Hard. Wasn't, yeah, that wasn't it. Yeah.
No.
Not Die Hard. So I'm going to kick this clam bake off by jumping into this because I've been chewing on this and chewing this. It's a great topic. And you guys are going to moan and groan when I say this because you're going to be like, how could you have missed that? Right. And that's the thing. We have to pinky swear that we're not going to mock each other for the fact that we missed it.
No mockery, but those of you playing the game at home will have to drink. So there you go.
That's yes. Right.
This is a mockery-free zone.
Mockery-free zone. All right. this particular one came out in 2006.
Wow.
All right. It's an American television crime drama mystery that came out in 2006 on the Showtime network. Ladies and gentlemen, Dexter.
Oh, my goodness.
Dexter. Wow. Okay. I have never, ever seen a Dexter episode until 2017. And I'm binging the things. I'm going all over it. Set in Miami, the series is about Dexter Morgan, who's a forensic technician who specializes in blood splatter pattern analysis for the Miami Metro Police Department or whatever. And of course, the twist here is that he leads a secret parallel life as a vigilante serial killer who hunts down and kills bad people. And he murders them. He's a psycho. He's a serial killer. Michael C. Hall, some of you may know him from 6 Feet Under, a wonderful actor, plays Dexter Morgan. And it is the actual plot, the story, the characters, it's from a series of books that was Darkly Dreaming Dexter. And it was a series of novels by Jeff Lindsay. And I've really enjoyed Dexter. The humor, the dark, twisted aspect of the character and what he does and the justifications for what he does. And I love how he talks. I love shows that are noirish in that they talk to the audience. I like that. And Dexter does. He talks to the audience and lets us know kind of what's going on. You know, this is my sister and I really like to eat these pork sandwiches and I have to find some way to kill this guy before the night's over because I need to do it. You know, his compulsion is the compelling part about him, but he's also, well, believe it or not, a decent human being with feelings and emotions. And as the series goes on, you realize he's been burying all that because he was trained by his father, who was a police officer, not to get caught.
Right.
And his father knew what Dexter was. You know, killing the family pet or burying it alive and being fascinated with blood and weapons and The guy was a cop. He looked at him and go, my son's a serial killer. I know he is. He's going to be a serial killer. So what can I do? I can mold him into being a serial killer that only kills really bad people. And that's the best I can do, you know? So he sort of created this, a monster by any stretch of the word. You know, he's absolutely a monstrous serial killer, but his justifications you get and you go, oh, that guy's a real piece of shit. He deserves to die. Right. He really deserves to die. You know, so you're kind of like, come on, Dexter, go ahead and get him too. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. You know? Oh, there's a wonderful, wonderful series, that I'm enjoying quite a bit. So, Julie Benz is in this as well. Maybe you know her from, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She was, oh goodness, what was it? Darla in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the vampire Darla. That's she, right. Is Dexter's love interest, at least his normal side, Dexter love interest, who he uses her as kind of a beard to hide the fact that he has no human emotion. But as the series goes on, he realizes, you know what? I actually do love her. It's really great to see the characters grow and see it run through. And it's, I think there was 8 seasons. And
yeah, 7 or 8. Yeah, it ran for a while. It had a good run.
Yeah.
I don't know what season you're in right now, but I want to brace you for the ending.
Okay.
It is not a Sopranos ending, but it ain't a Breaking Bad ending either. So it was very controversial.
Yeah.
Some folks really liked it. Some folks really didn't. Actually, my favorite thing about that show was the ongoing relationship he had with his dead father.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
His dad as a ghost shows up as sort of a combination Greek chorus / Jiminy Cricket to remind him, Dexter, you've got a code, you know, it's a wonderful series, particularly, even if you get to the point where you watch 3 or 4 seasons and go, I'm done with it. And Bill, you'll still watch some great TV. So that's good.
No, there's some really great stuff in there.
It's funny that you mentioned Dexter, actually. Just today I was reading, it popped up on my, you know, on Facebook or Twitter or something, but there was apparently a real life, they think one of the inspirations for Dexter, was an individual named Manuel Pardo. Who was a Florida Highway Patrol officer and later a police officer in Miami-Dade. He would go around killing drug dealers. He'd go around killing drug dealers and abusive pimps and things like that, kind of a taxi driver.
In the who's going to complain if this guy goes missing?
Exactly. Right. Exactly at his trial, he essentially said to the jurors, and I quote, I am a soldier. I accomplish my mission, and I humbly ask you to give me the glory of ending my life and not send me to spend the rest of my days in state prison. He was actually, he saw it as a duty. Instead of the blood slides, he would take photos. He would take photos of the victims.
Interesting.
And he would write all the details of the murders in his diary.
Wow.
So this was a real life Dexter. Yeah. He killed, he was a cop, and he killed bad guys.
Very cool. Very good. News to me.
It's actually pretty cool to watch in the show his careful planning and his executions of his murders.
Yeah.
You know, how he stalks his victims, learns about them. He has to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt that this guy is bad, that this guy is guilty, and this guy deserves what's going to happen to him. And, you know, he was very careful. He didn't want to make a mistake. And then when he finally does get him or her, because he's an equal opportunity serial killer, he does it very carefully, gloves, a plastic wrapped room, you know, very clean. And it's shocking. The very first time you see it happen, you're like, oh my God, this guy is nuts.
It's like he's euthanizing a family pet.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of almost, you know, sort of dispassionate, you know, very workmanlike attitude, you know? Yeah. Yeah. You find out that's really a ritual.
It is. It's every serial killer has their thing, and Dexter, as Aaron mentioned, collected samples of his victims' blood and put them on slides, glass slides, and kept them in a little box. You know that he would say, "Well, those are his trophies that he kept." Yeah. Like most serial killers have trophies.
Yeah. It's a really dark series, but highly recommended.
What season are you up to?
I am just starting. I'm just finishing season 3.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Cool. All right. Yeah.
You still have a couple of good seasons ahead of you.
Yeah.
I like Mark have heard fans were disappointed with the ending. I'd be curious to hear when you get to it, what you think.
Totally. We'll have a conversation about it, Joseph. I really Absolutely. Want your input.
Yeah, no doubt.
Cool.
So a 2006 series, Dexter, ran from 2006 to 2013, and I just discovered it in 2017.
Nice. You know, mine is a 2017 TV show, which we discovered in 2017, and it is so much fun. It's a TV show called Britannia.
Ooh.
And it stars David Morrissey, who played the governor in The Walking Dead. Kelly Riley, she played in the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. She played the wife of Watson, really pretty redhead who played his wife. The wonderful, I love this character actor, Mackenzie Crook, who was in The British Office in the role of Dwight. I forget what his
oh, character. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then later in the Pirates of the Caribbean as the pirate that had the Rigetti. Weird wood eye. Right.
Rigetti. Yeah.
Rigetti,
he plays this amazing character named Varin. He is one of the druids, and the druids have never, ever been done more cool or more creepy than in this show, Britannia. Ooh. Now, if you fancy yourself an amateur historian and you want everything to be just correct and exactly how it was, then guess what, Herodotus, this show is not for you. It is not. It takes the bigger picture of it's all about the Romans coming to Druid ruled England and sort of establishing themselves. Trying to reconquer the land. Yeah. And then that's it. That's where the historical similarities completely fly out the window. But who cares? It's so amazingly well done.
It's a historical fantasy then.
Correct. It is absolutely historical fantasy, especially because the character of Varin, the druid, you know, again, does he have supernatural powers? Does he not have supernatural powers? And there's other characters in the show that, again, you're like, wow, did he really like did that happen? Did he really just do that?
Yeah.
Where he could be possessed by a weird Celtic demon, or maybe he's not possessed by a weird Celtic demon. But so wonderful, and I highly recommend it. It was executive produced by Rick McCallum. He was the one that also produced all the sequels with George Lucas. The prequels with George Lucas. But don't let that color your opinion. It's actually a lot of fun. Well directed, great music, incredibly excellent performances. And then just a show. I love shows, especially period shows, that ooze atmosphere. Wow, this is a living, breathing place. I could see myself going there. And if you're any kind of a Romanophile, then you'll like the show. If you like Celtic stuff, you'll like the show.
Cool. Who doesn't like the Celtic?
I highly recommend. Again, the coolest take, bar none, on a druid that I have ever seen. They are so wonderfully creepy.
Yeah.
And mysterious, and they have the black eyes and you know, speaking about prophecy the whole time. It's so well done. So
nice.
That is one of the things I discovered in 2017, TV show called Britannia. Two big thumbs up.
Well, Joseph, I will see your 2008 and raise you 2002. Yeah. This I binge watched these. During a fit of ennui. It's an HBO series, very well thought of, highly regarded, and usually called by a lot of people the greatest TV show ever produced. It is The Wire.
It's a great show.
I agree. I don't think it was the greatest show ever. I think it's because season 5 slipped and season 4 started the slip. But I think the first 3 seasons may be as good as TV is capable of being. For those of you who have been in a cave, first of all, welcome out. Second, it's The Wire was a crime drama, and it's a heavy crime drama. In fact, if the first season is not opaque so much as oblique, you literally it feels like when you watch the first episode of The Wire in season one, it feels like you're on episode three and you missed the first two episodes. I mean, they literally drop you down in the middle with zero hints or takeaways or anything. And you really just have to have faith that you're going to understand who McNulty is and all these other guys are. And you do. It literally, it's the longest burn I've ever, it took six episodes before I started even remotely caring about these people. But it, once you get in it, it rewards, greatly. And especially, because one of the, what I love about the show, it, some people hate this and some people really like it. Each season was different. It all kind of worked around the idea of covert surveillance, and so you would go and get a wire to listen in on what people were doing. But the circumstances and even the cops, for the most part, changed from season to season. There's a few characters who carry over into from one season into the other. And some show up as tangential characters in a season, but they were really important last season. It's beautifully, beautifully done. It watches like how a book reads. And nice. That's one of the nicest compliments I can give a TV show.
That's huge, actually. Yeah,
it really does. I think they hit their critical peak with season three. Four and five are fun. But they lose a little bit of the heaviness that made them so good. But on the other hand, this is where we see Idris Elba first make his American appearance. Michael, what's his name? He's in Happen Leonard now. I'm trying to remember what Michael's last name is. He plays the hoodlum that keeps robbing all the other bad guys.
He's one of the best. He's one of the best characters in there. I can't think of his name either.
Think of his name either. Yeah, it's making me crazy. Anyways, wonderful, wonderful show. The reason why I hadn't seen it before is because I tried on three separate occasions to watch The Wire. I'd watch the first episode and then I would literally either fall asleep or think
Omar. His name was Omar.
Omar.
Yes. Omar. He played Omar in the show. What's his last name? Michael.
His name is, Michael Kenneth Williams.
Michael Kenneth Williams. I knew it was three names. He's also in Happen Leonard right now, opposite James Purfoy.
Yeah.
He plays a wonderful character who starts out seeming to be a collection of not stereotypes, but certainly tropes. Yeah. And he does such a good job on it that they layer him and he becomes this. He just sort of opens up and becomes this amazing character. And what's fun about it, if you're watching it now, is you will be looking at a scene and go, oh my God, that's Littlefinger.
Oh, yes.
You know, there's so, because this is where all of the really good HBO shows right now got everybody from, right?
Yes.
They just strip mined The Wire and put them in other things, you know. So it's fascinating. I love the show. It was great. You really have to have faith in that first season, that those first five or six episodes are going to eventually start hanging together for you. They do, but it is not something you can just go, I've got an hour, I'll see what the big deal is, which is how I watched it the first three times and never got into it. Uh-huh. So you really almost, that one you got to binge like the first three in a row and just trust that it makes sense. Every time it'd be like, people like this? What the hell? And then finally I was like, no, enough people have said this is good. and they'll say it in the same breath when they mention Breaking Bad and other things that are like, okay, fine. I'll do it. I'll do it. Yep. So if you had, so it was new to me in 2017. I'm sorry it took me so long to catch up. I still think Breaking Bad trumps it for sticking the landing like it did. Mm-hmm. But this was definitely dense and rich and wonderfully political. It brought up a lot of great points. You know, it was a conversation starter. You know, it in the best of ways. So
amazing actors in there, and a lot of them that I enjoy on Tremé, which is one of my favorite shows on HBO as well. But yes.
That, like I said, it was a weird kind of proving ground for a lot of unknown talent.
Yeah,
and then HBO and everybody else swooped in and said, you know, let's develop a show around Idris Elba and let's add these five guys to the Game of Thrones and you know. Nicely done, folks.
Nicely done, HBO. I want to share another show that I discovered in 2017, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. And actually, it's not that old. It was premiered on BBC in 2016. So, you know, I'm not that far behind. But I tell you, it's one of my absolute favorites, and I adore this show. It's a British TV series called Victoria, and it is a drama about the actual reign of Victoria Regina.
By the way, Blythe loves it. She loves it even more than Downton Abbey.
Victoria
is her new absolute favorite show.
It really is amazing. And Jenna Coleman, who plays Victoria, is spot perfect, because the actual Queen Victoria is a tiny little doll like woman. And was, you know, underestimated for the first part of her reign because of that. And she comes into her own and does it magnificently. My favorite part about this show is that it is a love story. It is a love story between Victoria Regina and the Queen, the Prince Consort Albert.
Oh yeah, and right.
Seeing them together, Tom Hughes plays Prince Albert in this, and first of all, a gorgeous man. But not only that, but I have you guys may be surprised by this news. I have an affinity for Vincent Price. I know. Surprise, surprise.
That's so weird.
I know. One of Vincent Price's big first successes that catapulted him into superstardom almost overnight was that he played Prince Albert to Helen Hayes's Victoria Regina in London and then on Broadway. And that's kind of what propelled Vincent Price to stardom. Vincent Price also bore a remarkable resemblance to Prince Albert.
Oh, how cool.
He was tall. He had the mustache. I mean, he was just very, very...
He could fit in a can. So,
yeah,
you
he
know,
could.
That was,
So when I see Tom Hughes as Prince Albert, I can't help it. My brain goes to Vincent Price. And I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. But it really is. It's a wonderful love story. And to see the way they look at each other, the way they talk to each other, they adored each other. And my heart's going to break because, historical spoiler, folks.
You know how this goes.
Yeah, Albert does pass before Victoria. Not a spoiler, that's just history. Look it up.
Yeah. But and apparently she mourns him the rest of her life.
That's right. Yep. Absolutely right. And so it's going to be heart-wrenching. I don't know if the series is going to go that far, but it's incredibly popular it historically. And then you get a little bit of Downton Abbey flavor, because we do get to meet the household servants, or the palace servants, and see them and their interactions, and we have all these characters coming and going, and the trauma of being a queen and trying to live a normal life and having a husband who is, of course, your husband but also your subject. So there's a lot of back and forth between the two. And Albert is his own man. Albert will not sit around and just be told what to do. He's very much his own man, which is great. And Victoria adores him, but she also is the queen. So she's like, Albert, I'm the queen,
And I love the actor that plays Albert. Oh, yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell me, it's BBC. What's it on right now? Is it on BBC America?
It's on Masterpiece. It's on PBS.
Okay.
We watch it on PBS. That's where we get it. On PBS. Yeah.
Well, my wife loves Downton Abbey the way other people.
Oh my
like
gosh,
she's Dallas got Cowboys, and so I'm gonna show her this, and she'll get into it. Yeah.
The first the first few episodes, the first season, it picks up right where she ascends to the throne, and her prime minister is Lord Melbourne, or Lord M, as she calls him, played amazingly by Rufus Sewell, who I just adore that actor.
Oh, he's great! Yeah,
yes.
He's wonderful. Rufus Sewell is fantastic in the show.
Oh my God, it's heavily laden with emotion, and these actors and actresses are amazingly talented. Of course,
don't you agree, Joseph? They do such a great job of weaving in themes that are very relevant.
And very much.
Recognize a mark when you watch it. Yeah. What's happening right now in this country. I mean, very relevant.
It is. It's easy to see.
Yeah, it's done so well. It's such a great show.
Okay. All right.
And of course, even Diana Riggs, fresh from her poisoning in Game of Thrones, has shown up in the show as well. And she's fantastic. Of course,
they all are. Yeah, she's a great character too. Yeah. No, great cast, great performance. Yeah. Again, as period movies go, this one oozes atmosphere. And you know, they do such a great job recreating that early Victorian period. It's really, really top notch.
Yeah,
outstanding. Highly recommend. All right. Thank you. Yeah, great recommendation. Aaron, you got another one for us?
All right, I'm going to jump away from TV and go to a book. Well, actually, a series of books, since I've only just started the second one. I have had this ongoing issue, and Mark knows about it. And every now and then I sort of lament to him, like, man, I can't find books that entertain me the way the early sword and sorcery did. You know, the works of Michael Moorcock. The works of Robert E. Howard. I mean, I want books like that, you know, not big, thick tomes that are going to take me a lifetime to read, but quick, pithy, shorter books that are just filled with great fantasy and imagination. I found one, folks. It is called The Vagrant by author Peter Newman. And it does everything. I finished it a few days ago, and it does everything that I've been wanting a book like this to do. Nice. It reminds me of those wonderfully imaginative worlds of Michael Moorcock, where the world is, you know, nothing is explained to you, right? It's not like he says, well, long ago this happened and then that happened. No. You're just thrust into the world, and you're learning about the world as the character. Who, this is another thing I love about him. The character is mute. The character never speaks. He never speaks, and he's wandering through this blasted post-apocalyptic world, which is a combination, like a science fantasy world, that has been taken over by a wave of demons that came through a dimensional rift, attacked this world, and the only way they can exist in this world is to basically build physical bodies for themselves, either from the corpses of the people that have been murdered or by possessing people. So you have these horrible patchwork creatures wandering around the land that are, you know, composed of body parts. It might have somebody's torso as an arm, and, you know, that kind of thing. And so the visuals are just wonderfully phantasmagoric. The Vagrant is our hero. He's wandering through this landscape with a baby. And that's the other really cool part. He has a baby, a young, and a goat, the most ornery and amazing goat that you have ever seen in literature. I don't know how many goats you've maybe Billy Goat Gruff, but this little goat has more personality, and it's amazing because that's where he gets the milk to feed the baby, right? But he struggles with the goat just as much as he does with mutants and monsters and demons, because the goat's ornery. The goat's ornery and doesn't like him. And so it's these three. It's the goat, the vagrant, the mute vagrant, and the baby wandering across this landscape, heading to some destination. I don't want to spoil it for people, because you just have to pick it up. There's no other way to describe it, except I remember I finished it, and I was telling a friend of mine about it, and he was like, well, it sounds really interesting. I said, you know what it's like? It's like somebody whispering a fairy tale to you in the dark. That is the best way I can describe this. If somebody just started whispering a fable to you in the pitch black night, that is the feeling that this story evokes. It's a trilogy.
How many books are there? Three?
There's three, yeah. Okay. And there's more stories set in that world.
Oh, okay.
I just finished The Vagrant. I started with The Malice, which is the second book. And The Malice is the name of the man's sword So again, that great tip of the hat to Michael Moorcock and Elric and Stormbringer. The Malice is a character all into itself. It is a sentient weapon that exists to do only one thing, and that is to destroy these demons. And so, again, I cannot recommend it enough. If you're looking for something a little different off the beaten path with fantasy, if you don't want these big, long epics anymore, like the Robert Jordans and these big, thick books, The Vagrant is for you. It is just, it'll transport you to a totally alien and amazing phantasmagoric world with compelling characters, one who never speaks and is just as compelling as characters who, you know, gab on and on and on. So, yep, The Vagrant, The Malice is the second one, and The Seven is the third in the trilogy.
When you told me about it, I went and bought The Vagrant based solely on the amount of gushing you did.
Okay.
So it's on my to be read list. Okay. It's not there, but it's near the top. So I'm excited. Gosh,
Mark, I want to hear what especially you. I want to hear what you have to say about this book and if it affects you the way I went back and I started rereading the original. I found the original Conan stories, the ones that had not been edited down.
Yeah.
But yeah. His original stories. And, you know, reading the Frost Giant's Daughters and the Tower of the Elephant and all. And I'm like, yep, that's it. That is exactly the kind of feeling The Vagrant gives me. It's like reading those original Howard, those original Lieber, those original Moorcock stories. That's
perfect.
What it's like.
Yeah, perfect. All right. Nice. That's a must-do. Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I feel like this is sort of obvious because we all had a chance to discover it. But I'm going to go ahead and mention it because I think it kind of needs to get mentioned here. Just sort of for what it did. And that is the movie Get Out.
Okay.
The reason is because, you know, the current generation always hates it. They always think that they're the first to do something and to get something. And they're usually very put out when they find out that other people did it and they just didn't know about it, you know, or whatever. And I think that's more and more frequent these days with the compartmentalization and the segmenting of how people learn things and how socially you go to the link that you're provided to, but you don't read widely, you know, that kind of deal. So, and that I said all of that, not to take anything away from Get Out for what it did, but, I thought it was an incredible achievement, particularly, for this guy's first turn at bat, for what he managed to write and what he managed to create. And let's face it, you know, It's a genre film.
Yeah.
you know, unapologetically say what you know, let everybody say what they're going to say about it, but it's a horror story. Yeah, it just is, you know?
And by the way, how happy are all three of us that genre horror stories dominated the Oscars this last couple of weeks. Our hearts are soaring that these movies are being taken seriously as art, as we've known they always have been.
So Get Out was one of those films that maybe you decided not to watch it because you heard of the hype. Maybe, you know, you thought to yourself, it can't possibly be that good. And, you know, honest to goodness, I feel like sometimes people oversell stuff these days when they want to make a point about something.
Yeah.
And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I get it. Sometimes you have to slant things a certain way in order to get what you feel is the right attention on a project.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is something to be said for letting people discover things on their own. And draw those conclusions on their own. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, I don't think we're all even the dumbest among us who are addicted to the phones and don't have the sense in their head that God gave a weasel. are smart enough to know when you're A, being pandered to, B, when you're being lectured to, and C, when you're being talked down to. And so that's this is not the way to sell a movie on somebody, especially because Get Out is so rich with subtext. It's got great stuff in it. It's a fantastic. I was fascinated all the way through it. You know, in the same way that I was fascinated watching Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. This was not my world, but it's definitely a world, and it's a separate experience from anything I was used to. And so that alone right there makes it worth exploring and talking about. So anyways, I thought the movie was great. I'm glad he won an Academy Award for it. I do think it should have won for original screenplay. He was up against tough competition in other categories at the Oscars.
I think that you mentioned earlier, you said that it wasn't new. I mean, it isn't. It is cobbled together. There is a lot of homages there. We who are genre film fans have seen these types of things before. So in that instance, and even to the point where Shape of Water did win for best original screenplay, I think that if you took the two side by side.
No, actually, Get Out won for best original screenplay.
Oh, I thought it was.
Shape of Water won for best picture and best director.
Picture. Okay, that's right. Yes. Director. Okay, yes. But when you look at those two films side by side, they're all very derivative of past films. I mean, totally. There are elements that you go, oh yeah, well they got that, and especially knowing the talents behind them, Guillermo and Jordan Peele, you know, knowing their backgrounds and knowing what they like and their amazing creativity, it's easy to see that these guys had the same influences and exposure to films, television, pop culture that we did, you know, and so it shaped them. So it's an easy puzzle piece fit. When you see those things. And I want to urge everyone who has seen Get Out to watch it again. Because if you haven't seen it more than once, watch it again. Because now that you know the twist and now that you know what's going to happen, just pay attention and you'll see a lot of delightful things there. So that's the only thing I'm going
to
say.
And maybe what I'm really trying to kind of get across is whatever you read about these kinds of projects, whether it's Get Out or Wrinkle in Time, whatever, always remember that you have to take it with a grain of salt and kind of do your own thing. I wanted to make the point that there was more than one person saying that this is the first horror movie with a black protagonist. you just have to laugh at that because you don't even have to go back to Blackula. You can go back to Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of people. Kind of yakking and they're yakking with zero information at hand.
Part of it, I, you know, they mean well, that's the thing. I mean, I heard the same thing when it was like Black Panther. Wow. The first black superhero as Blade is flipping in his grave.
Right. And as Hitchcock is, or as Hancock is looking around.
Yes.
So with his bladed pants,
I think it comes from a place of enthusiasm and happiness and, oh my gosh, look at this. This is so good. So, but like you, Mark, I kind of roll my eyes, but I also understand that they're excited that right now in 2018, there is a film that's made $1 billion that stars a black superhero and an unknown actor as a black superhero.
Totally.
And I think that is exciting. That is absolutely exciting.
Yeah. I don't want to take it, I think the only thing you should take from it is the enthusiasm, you know? Kind of treat it like sort of an aggregate. Wow, everybody's really amped up about this. Then go do your own homework, because you're gonna find a lot of things. And these people do not mean to be untrue. They're not intentionally leading you astray. It's ignorance rather than malfeasance or, you know, malice aforethought. It's just, you know, you got people talking about genre films that are 25 years old that have never seen Night of the Living Dead. Yeah. How can you have an opinion about it?
Or Dawn of the Dead, for heaven's sakes.
Or Dawn of
the Dead. What the hell, man?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Or Day of the Dead. I mean,
hey, I know.
Which, by the way, good news. So did you read? So because of the amazing success that Del Toro had at the Oscars, they have apparently, this could be a rumor only, but they have apparently now again greenlit his At the Mountains of Madness project.
Thank you, Jesus. It only took an Academy Award to get there. But I know.
I'm so pleased. I'm so pleased by that.
I love
the story
until it's official.
I know. And by the way, you are wise because many times have we heard this movie in development and something happens. Let's hope that his best case scenario is to rush it along until like it's too late to cancel it. Like, you know, they've cast it, they've committed the budget, they've started pre-production. So I'm of the opinion of like, hurry up, Guillermo, get started already.
Before the days are mine.
Finn's axiom of movie theater rumors, it goes something like this. And for those of you at home, you might want to write this down. This will be on the test. Until you see a leaked photograph online of the actor in question in costume on the set holding a Starbucks latte and talking to an AD, they're not making that movie.
Yeah.
I don't care what you've heard. I don't care what you think you know. Until you see the leaked photograph of that character, that actor, actress in costume on set, kind of sharing a laugh with their co-star or running down the street sans cape. You know, I know they cast Benjamin Cumberbatch. Until I see it, I don't believe it. And what this does, I know you're thinking, Mark, that seems a bit extreme. What this does is this frees you up to worry about other things. Because if you sit around waiting for the Nicolas Cage Superman movie, I guarantee you there's a guy out there right now going, "They're still going to do it, man." No, that ship has not only sailed, it's been torpedoed and is sitting at the bottom of the Bermuda Triangle as we speak.
It has exploded with the planet Krypton. It's not here anymore. That is a thing that's not around.
This whole thing is, you know, it's just, this is a time saver. It's a brain space saver because we don't have enough space in our brains to hold all this information. And you get no credit if they're right. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, you get no credit if it actually happens. So as we count geek coup, this is not a scalp that counts. This is not a touch that you need to worry about. All you need to do is take the rumor in, remember my axiom, and then let it go. Just send it back out of your brain. Because what's going to happen is somebody 6 to 9 to 12 to 15 to 24 months from now is going to go, OMG, look, hit you. Tag you on Facebook, and you'll see a picture of Brie Larson in a Captain Marvel outfit, and you'll go, oh, cool, they really are doing that. And now you can be excited. Now you can start the gimme, gimme, gimme dance.
And for heaven's sakes, don't believe an image online unless, as Mark said, you can be absolutely sure. In other words, hey, look, here's a new poster. The poster has been released. No, it's not real. Don't believe it.
Yep. Somebody mocked it up.
And sometimes trailers aren't even real. These guys are doing amazing jobs with like cobbling together images. And you're wait a minute. Yeah. That's not real.
Some of those take me several seconds before I go, oh, well, no, wait a minute. That's from Sicario or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, like, speaking of Dexter earlier in this show, somebody released a poster of Dexter season 9 premiering in 2018.
Right.
And I was just like, what? You know, had a picture of the boat and a bloody ocean and it looked really legit. And it was just like, but, you know, and some friends of mine who were fans of the show went, I can't believe they're doing this. And I said, I can't believe they're doing this either. And then the creators of the show had to come out and go, no, that's fake.
Somebody sent me a pic, there was a photo floating around. Now there's several. Of Captain Marvel from the DC Shazam movie, and they go, "Hey, look, you know Captain Marvel," and I knew they were working on one. I'm like, "No, no, that's fake. That's somebody cosplaying or something. Yeah. And they're like, no. Then they sent me a follow-up and I'm like, oh, nope, there he is. God damn it. He's in the fucking red and gold and white costume.
I saw that. Cool. And it does look like a cosplay because it looks really bad, the costume. I was not impressed.
I'm guessing they will. I mean, it's not, from what I can tell, it's not being done by the same group that has been doing the Superman, Batman movies and Justice League and such. Mm. It's being done by a different studio. Yeah. I actually like, I happen to be maybe one of those few that really likes Captain Marvel's
costume. I love Captain Marvel's costume.
As goofy as it looks.
Yeah, he looks like an angry, what's his name? With the eyebrows.
Fred McMurray?
Thank you, Fred McMurray. He looks like a pissed off Fred McMurray. I love Captain. If you watch the old serial, the old Captain Marvel serial with Tom Tyler, who went on to play Karis the Mummy in The Mummy's Hand, with Tom Tyler as Captain Marvel, or not Shazam. No, I won't call him Shazam. That's not his name. His name is Captain Marvel.
Uh-huh.
And that the costume he wears, and I love the concept of this boy who can do what he does by saying the word power. Yeah, that's correct.
In fact, I wish I could, that they would have some color stills of that old black and white Captain Marvel show, because I did love the way he looked in that costume.
Yeah,
he had a little short capelet, and I mean, straight out of the comics, man. That guy came straight out of the comics. But like Mark says, now, you know, I have to apply that restraint every time somebody says, hey, did you know that, you know, Denis Villeneuve is going to make 2 Dune movies? And I'm like, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I want it to happen so badly. I want 2 Dune movies made by Denis Villeneuve. But you know, it may happen. It may not. Even he says, I've seen YouTube clips of him going, you know, it's talk right now. It's talk. We're starting to write the script. Nothing is official. Nothing's been greenlit. But do I want to do it? Yes, of course. You know, it's one of my passion projects.
Hey, speaking about talk, do we have time for another round or maybe a lightning round?
Let's do a lightning round.
Okay, so I'm gonna list 2 in my lightning round, and then we can all list as many as you want before we get back around again. I do want to say that in the beginning of 2017, my New Year's resolution was to support horror more in the theaters. I said I'm going to support horror movies more. I've been a bad horror fan, and I haven't been out to the movies to pay my shekels and support the genre that I profess to love so much. That happened, and I said, okay, there's a new Insidious film, The Last Key, coming out in 2018. I will see that in the theaters, but first, I should probably watch all the other ones because I've never seen them.
Ah, so, what did you think?
New to me in 2017 was the Insidious series. Briefly, it's actually very cleverly done. 1 and 2, I highly recommend 1 and 2. The rest of them, you take or leave. 2, obviously not as good as 1. 1, absolutely hands down the best. A couple of moments in there that I would have changed, that I had questions about. But the plot is really cool. Anyone who's ever played Dungeons and Dragons and knows about astral projection, this is going to make you happy because you're like, oh, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And that, oh, that's creepy as hell. The first one is actually very well done. That's my first lightning round, Insidious. And that was back again from 2010 is when it was released. My second one is back to the small screen real quick for another TV series that is on PBS. It's a BBC show. It's called Poldark. And it's a story, it's set in Cornwall. And it's a story of this British revolutionary soldier who comes back to his town of Cornwall after the Revolutionary War, where he's injured, to find his fiance engaged to another man, his father dead, and his estate in ruins. And it's compelling historical drama. It's all it is. It's drama.
Such drama.
But Ross Poldark, the hero, our hero, Aidan Turner is in the lead role, plays Ross Poldark, beautiful man, but just, you know, brooding and it's beautiful sets with the sweeping clouds and the hilltops and the countryside, and there's the rich against the poor, and then it's very, very compelling. Highly recommended. Poldark is what it's called. That's Poldark, and it was based on a series of books as well, and it's on BBC or PBS, so look it up.
Nice. Okay. All right, so lightning round. I'm gonna do a video game that I discovered in 2017, Horizon Zero Dawn. Very, very excellent. Done by Sony Interactive Entertainment for the PlayStation 4. It's what I played it on. So much fun. So much fun. Again, it is a, I mean, post-apocalyptic, but it's not. I mean, it's society has ended and restarted. And so everybody is back to the state of, you know, I guess, not quite primitive, but, you know, they use bows and arrows and but they have technology. They do have technology that they use, robots that wander the world, essentially. And the whole game is about figuring out what's going on. The robots are starting to become very aggressive. Nobody knows why. And then answering the questions of how the world became this way, who is corrupting these robots, what's going on, finding all those answers is a lot of fun. A very compelling story, very well written. And the gameplay is just fun. It's fun. You hunt fucking robot dinosaurs. That's essentially what you do. And I say dinosaurs, but really they're more like, you know, the equivalent of a robot lion or a robot bear or a robot, you know, this kind of thing. And it's Horizon Zero Dawn, lots and lots of fun. I recommend people pick it up. And that was published in 2017. So that actually, not only was it in 2017, I discovered it in 2017. And then one other quick one, a movie on Netflix called The Ritual.
Oh, yes.
Also released in 2017. Mm-hmm. It's a small film about a bunch of friends that get together to do a trip through the forest in some Scandinavian country up in the dark Nordic cold forests. Mm-hmm. And they encounter a thing. They encounter and it's straight out of a Lovecraftian story, a Lovecraftian nightmare.
Yeah.
It's done so well, directed by David Bruckner, written by Joe Barton. And apparently it's based on a novel of the same name. Uh-huh. By Adam Neville. Which was published in 2011. Yeah. So, yep, The Ritual, it's on Netflix. If you love horror and you love Lovecraft, yeah. I think this is well worth a watch. One of the most, one of the most amazing creature designs. Ooh. That I've seen in a long, long time.
Cool.
The beastie they encounter, yeah, is just a fantastic looking thing.
Cool. Yeah, I saw the trailer for it. It looked great.
Watch it. I think you would like it, Joseph. Yeah. You really must watch it.
Yeah, I've seen it. It was great. It was great.
Excellent.
All right. Okay. I have a long list, so I'm gonna go very fast.
Okay.
starting with a comic book series written by my friend Jeff Parker, called Future Quest.
Okay.
This is the mashup of the Hanna-Barbera universe. That starts out with the Galaxy Trio fighting something big in space, and then switches down to Earth, where Benton Quest is doing some experiments and runs into Dr. Zen. That's when the Herculoids show up fighting Space Ghost. And I'm not kidding. It's everything you wanted. Oh my friends. It's even got Birdman.
Let me ask you, how did he get the rights to all that?
It's a DC comic. They own.
I see.
Yeah.
So they own all the Hanna-Barbera characters?
Comic book publishing rights. Okay. And so what they did was, instead of doing individual books, they just made one giant ass thing. And it's there's That's two fantastic. Trade paperbacks. Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful trip down nostalgia lane that does not disappoint you, such as when you actually go watch the old Birdman episodes.
Right,
really, really good. Nice. Nice. Victor Laval's The Ballad of Black Tom. One of the best Lovecraftian books I've read in a while.
Okay.
It takes the most racist and offensive Lovecraft story, the horror out of Red Hook, and flips the script and turns it into a black musician who gets invited to this weirdo's gig. And so the whole thing is literally the other side of the story. Brilliantly, brilliantly done. Two more books real quick. Meddling Kids, for those of you who have been just stupid over Stranger Things, this is a book by Edgar Cantero, it is literally Scooby-Doo meets Lovecraft, sort of. Nice. Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing. Awesome, great stuff. And then finally, My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is by Grady Hendrix. And when you Google this title, Joseph, you and Aaron both are going to get a real flashback kick. Okay. The book cover itself, including the back pic, looks exactly like one of those oversized VHS cassette tape boxes.
Oh, lovely. That's with awesome.
It has like a Spectravision rainbow that runs around the side. Yeah. It's got a battered VHS sticker. You flip it over. On the front is a sticker that says, "Be kind, please rewind."
That's great.
It's genius. Say it again.
I want to write that down. What's it?
My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Okay.
Yes, by Grady Hendrix with an X. This is a kind of a funny, dark, high school, not Buffy kind of story. Yeah. It's very readable. A wonderful little trip down nostalgia lane.
What was the one with Birdman and all that? What was that one called?
Oh, Mark? It's called Future Quest.
Future Quest.
Yeah. I think it might be Hanna-Barbera Universe Future Quest. But if you type in Future Quest by Jeff Parker, it'll pop up.
Perfect.
Parker, by the way, has been doing a great job. He was the guy that was writing the Batman 66 series.
Oh, I love that.
Well, if you like Jeff's stuff, Jeff has a really what I like best about Parker is his ability to capture tone without devolving into mimicry. Mm. Right? You know, nice. And so you know, like these characters, because you're so used to seeing Johnny and Haji and Race and Space Ghost, you're so used to seeing them. You're going to you'll hear the voices in your head. They'll come to life for you.
Yeah.
But none of the things coming out of their mouth sound false. And also they don't sound weirdly dated either. It has a timeless quality to it, which I think is necessary considering the mashup that he had to do that would include the Herculoids, Space Ghost, Birdman. I mean, it's a wonderful, he did a hell of a job with it. And I like Jeff's stuff a lot. So
yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Yep. Awesome.
So if you guys are, those are good reads. Those are good. As we move into beach season, or hey, some of you are on spring break. It's March. Perfect time to get a book and read it. Those of you over the age of 18.
Okay. Don't forget to read, kids. Well, that's right.
Study hard, stay in school.
I love it. The more you know.
Yep.
Well, I do know that we've got the red eye, and it is time to wrap this episode up. Ladies and gentlemen, the Gentlemen Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and was written by Aaron DiArrive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, and Joseph Fotinos, with additional material provided by Lord M. Thank you. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, the Gentleman Nerds mascot, who has no name, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was unknown to us all. I don't know who that was, giving us our drinks tonight.
Weird guy, yeah.
Oh, wait, you know who that is? That's Mickey Finn. Look.
Hey, nice. Mickey. Wow, you look good, brother.
What's up, man?
Mickey.
I love it. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron DiArrive. The Gentleman Nerd's attorney is Dr. Gonzo. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher DiArrive. Please, ladies and gentlemen, join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. And please always remember to tip your bartenders and your wait staff. Final words, gentlemen?
Yeah, real quick. Guys, keep exploring and trying new things.
Amen.
Don't be afraid to try new stuff. That's how you find good stuff.
Yep. Amen to that. Aaron?
And by the way, I want to say, I know that you guys, the listeners, that you are aware of the Lobot Lounge. Of course, you know the website. We really, really would love more of your comments, things that you want us to check out that you're particularly fond of, maybe things you discovered in 2017 that you would like to get our take on, or a movie that you really love and you want to know what we think about. post on the Lobot Lounge and say, hey, in a future episode, I'd love it if you guys talked about this movie or talked about this series of books or talked about this old TV show, because I love that stuff. And yeah. I just, nobody talks about that anymore. And we would be glad to look into that, to study it, to review it, and to get back to you with our thoughts. So
absolutely.
Post us your feelings, folks. We definitely want to hear.
That's right. It's on Facebook, folks. Just look up the Lobot Lounge and you will find us. I'm Joseph Otitos, reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
Good episode, gentlemen.
Yep, awesome.
Nicely done. Nicely done. And now we've all got stuff to go look up.
I know. That's exciting. Yeah. I'm actually going to, as soon as we leave here, I'm going to go back out into the living room and continue watching something that's also new to me in 2017, and that's Mindhunter.
The Netflix series. Isn't that fun?
Man, I just literally discovered it, and I'm watching it. But the first episode, I'm watching it right now. So, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, nice. You guys are going to dig it. All right.
Yeah.